Ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by the Hagen Oaks Golf Super Shop, America's most awarded golf facility. Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Welcome into the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. Hi, everyone. I'm Frank LaRosa. Scott Marsh is with me. And Scott, we get to talk about golf again.
Gotta love it. Big week, U.S. Open. We've got some great guests.
Len Dumas, the executive director and COO of the Northern California PGA, is going to talk to us a little bit about what the real difference is between the PGA Tour players and the PGA of America. There's been a lot of confusion over this LIV and PGA Tour agreement, and in some cases it's gotten political, and the local PGA pros have maybe got caught up in that, and without any reason, since the two organizations are totally different. So Len's gonna let us know what that's all about. Marty Fish, a friend of yours from the American Century Championship, is going to be with us to talk about his career playing up there and his battles with mental health.
Yeah, it's amazing. He played for the Sacramento Capitals Team Tennis. He was top 10 in the world, part of a Netflix feature series. And of course, he's one of the best golfers every year at the celebrity tournament. So it'll be a great time talking to him.
Tom Morton, PGA Director of Player Development at Hagen Oaks, is another regular and always welcome here on the show, because I don't know about you, but I always pick up something that I forgot. And I know for that next round, my game is better anyway.
He knows more golf than I'll ever, or he'll forget more golf than I'll ever know. That's the saying right there. I always like talking to Tom.
All that and more coming up on this edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. Back right after these messages.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
You are listening to the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa. Scott Marsh is with me, and we are going to welcome in Mr. Len Dumas, PGA. Len is the executive director and COO of the Northern California PGA. Len, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Scott. Always great to be back. And once again, appreciate your support, both of you and Sactown Sports for the support of our programming and everything we have going here in Northern California.
There's always something going on. I think I'd mentioned to Scott, I had the honor to MC the Hall of Fame portion of your semi-annual meeting just this past week up at up in Reno, and I want to congratulate you on that event. You really made those new members of your NCPGA Hall of Fame feel very welcome, and it was exciting to be a part of that.
Yeah, thank you, Frank. As you and I talked right before we launched the program, that was our sixth already Hall of Fame induction class. So I believe the head count is now 29, which is just great. And it was a wonderful event to see the families and our honorees, Olin Dutra, tremendous champion from the 1930s, and club professional Paul Wilcox, of course, our dear Paul, Jerry Thorman, there's only one Thor, and of course, Johnny Miller, San Francisco native and a great, great champion, great announcer, and quite a character. So it was a wonderful class.
They all had a great time, and I think everybody in the audience had a great time as well. So congratulations on another well-run meeting. U.S. Open, obviously, this week, and there's a great local connection with one of your PGA professionals and a player there as well.
Yeah, Frank, thank you for that. Philip Dawson. Philip is a section member and has been for quite a long time and quite an accomplished teacher. And Philip has one of his players, Corey Pereira, in the U.S. Open, and he's been sending us videos and photos, and so we'll put an album together. Philip has been teaching Corey since he was 11 years old, and so this is just great. He'll be on the bag, and we wish them the best of luck and success. Not only a difficult venue, but a very difficult setup, and so good luck, Corey. Good luck, Philip, and thank you for being such great ambassadors.
Absolutely. The U.S. Open brings up, the thing that's been in the news lately certainly is the the agreement to agree, I guess, is probably the best way to describe it between the LIV Tour and the PGA Tour. And again, I've tried not to get into it too much here on the show because what we know today is probably going to be different tomorrow. And until this all gets sorted out, it's still a bit confusing to everybody. But one of the points of confusion that certainly means very much to you and your organization is the fact that many people are confusing the PGA of America, which is the organization you're involved with, and the PGA Tour, which is the organization that's making the relationship with the LIV Golf Tour. Two separate organizations. How did that all come about, and where does this confusion lie, and how can we help people understand the difference?
Yeah, thank you, Frank. And no question that we all know the same thing, which is not very much. But an important distinction is that we are not the PGA Tour. We have actually been separated from the PGA Tour since 1968. So that's quite a few years ago. Our mission is to serve our members and grow the game. And that's what we stick to with all the club professionals that we have here in Northern California and throughout the country, work every day, to take golf, bring golf to everybody that wants to play through lessons, through hosting events, through hosting junior programming. And now we hit that time of the year where the junior programming just takes off. Our philanthropic side of working with our veterans. And here we just have a tremendous PGA Hope Helping Our Patriots Everywhere program, all the way from Chico down to Dinuba. And some folks know where Dinuba is, I understand, which is very helpful. But, that's what we do. That's what the PGA of America does. 29,000 men and women, members and associates that work on a daily basis very hard to take the game and enjoy the game and keep riding the wave that we've been experiencing.
I know Scott and I are big fans of the PGA. And, when we run into a PGA pro, we kind of thank them for what they do on a local basis to continue to grow the game and to help us with lessons. And Scott, I know that you've had some relationships with PGA pros over the course of your golf career, and they've all been positive.
Yeah, no question about it. First of all, I've been to Dinuba. It's down by Tulare. So it's a great city, part of the year representation. So that's all good. I think what's so exciting, so many people that have come up to me, we talk about PGA professionals, and obviously with what Michael Block did in the PGA tournament is such a miraculous story. And everybody's talking about that because that's just something the common man, I think, can relate to, even though Michael Block is an unbelievable golfer. But maybe just talk about that and what that's meant in terms of just some profile for some of the PGA pros.
And that, Scott, is just over the top. That's what Arnold Palmer, right? The king was every man's golfer, right? Coming out of Latrobe, Pennsylvania, and driving the tractor around. And Michael took it to the all the way to the other extent, not only making the cut in the PGA Championship in Rochester a couple of weeks ago, but also, finishing in the top 15, playing with Rory, making a hole, getting a hole in one during his round, and then an incredible save on 18. So that really helped elevate the local professionals to keep up their level of golf to that extent while still working on a daily basis, being behind the counter, pulling out the golf cars, putting them back at night, giving lessons, as Frank mentioned, and running programming is just outstanding. So we do have 20 spots in the PGA Championship. And there are four rounds of qualifying to get those 20 spots. So in Michael finishing 15th, he's exempt next year at the PGA Championship at Valhalla in Kentucky. And so those other 20 spots still exist, which is just tremendous. Two years ago in 2021, we had our own Brad Merrick out in Kiowa. Yeah. And so when we have our section professionals, again, across the country, when the PGA members are playing to that level and having those accomplishments, it's great for the game because we can all relate to them. They're available. They're our instructors. They're our colleagues. They're our friends, and so on and so forth. Just outstanding.
You played a video during the semi-annual meeting this past week, kind of highlighting Michael Block, and it was fun to kind of watch the sense of pride and accomplishment that all of the PGA professionals from Northern California felt in having one of their guys, playing at that level.
Yeah, Frank, you're right. We're in this together, right? We all, for the most part, know each other and look forward to cheer for each other. And golf, we see that all the time. We always cheer for somebody. So we're very grateful for that. Congratulations to Michael and all the PGA members and associates that are out there playing on a daily basis and continuing to pursue their goals and their dreams.
Unlike the game of golf, time is our enemy here, so we're always up against it. I got about a minute. Tell me what's on the initiatives for this summer.
Well, as I mentioned, Frank, we now launch our junior programming, so we'll have our first drive, chip, and putt tomorrow down in Chalk Mountain, so very, very excited to that, and our team will be headed down there, which is great. PGA Junior League is off and running. We're having another tremendous season there, and interestingly enough, in 60 days, we'll be wrapping it all up. So those first 2 weeks in August are generally just off the charts with the championships and so on, but we love it. Our spring PGA Hope programs have two more sessions, one tonight at Boundary Oak and Walnut Creek, and then one more at Sierra Sage in Reno. And we dig into the summer, and we'll be starting up PGA Hope in no time at all.
And U.S. Women's Open coming, and I know that the local PGA will have some involvement with that as well.
Yes, we shall. Frank, we're grateful. 3 weeks from tomorrow will be the first round and the historic first round of the U.S. Women's Open, the first time at Pebble Beach. We'll be down there supporting, saluting, and cheering.
That's Len Dumas. He's the executive director and COO of the Northern California PGA and a regular on the show. And we appreciate all he has to offer and all that the local PGA professionals in Northern California and all the sections have to offer to us to help play the game better, enjoy the game better, and grow the game as they're doing it. Len, thanks so much, as always, for being with us.
Yeah. Frank, Scott, thank you. Again, thank you all the support, and we'll see you as we go.
Golf to Go Radio Hour continues with Marty Fish right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome into the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa. Scott Marsh is there, and Marty Fish is with us. Marty is a former professional tennis player whom you're going to see at the American Century Championship at Edgewood Tahoe this year. Marty, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's great to be on with you guys. It's great to be here in Tahoe at the moment, about a month out from the event. So sunny South Lake Tahoe. Didn't get much better than this.
No, it's a pretty incredible spot in the world, and enjoy every moment that it offers to you. You know, I was actually doing a little bit of research on you, and one of the things that I came across, and certainly hope that it was true, we all are very well aware of Tiger Woods and his hitting a golf shot on the mic. What was his name? On the television show so many years ago.
Yeah, what was it, like the Johnny Carson show or something like that?
Yeah, it was something like that,
but yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And so I learned that when you were 2 years old, a Minneapolis TV station did a little insight on you hitting balls from the baseline over the net at 2 years old. That's pretty incredible.
Slow news day, obviously. but yeah, I could. You know, I am the son or product of a tennis family, and grew up. My mom tied a string around the ceiling of our basement in Minnesota where I was born, and a tennis ball at the end. And she put a tennis racket and a golf club and a baseball bat right there next to it. And when I would go down there, I'd just grab something and I'd swing it, and I'd swing it all from the same side. So I'd swing everything a righty tennis backhand, two-handed backhand, which would then mean a lefty tennis or a lefty baseball swing and a lefty golf swing. And so that's kind of how I developed my obviously love for sports, but certainly from that side of the ball, whether it be a tennis, baseball, or a golf ball. And yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I could, I don't know how or why, I don't know, you know, but it was true. I can confirm, that yes, it was a slow news day and that, I could hit the ball over the net when I was two.
You know, it's pretty incredible. You were well ahead of your time because, many thought in those days that you had to concentrate on one sport, but the thinking today is play as many sports as you can and find the similarities in them. And you did play baseball and ended up playing golf as well.
I'm a big believer in obviously playing multiple sports, yes, but playing team sports and individual sports growing up. I think, you know, I have a son who's 9 years old. He's big into sports. He loves, he's super, sporty and athletic or whatever. And so he loves, so loves sports. So we got him in baseball and golf at the moment. And he loves it. And he loves the team aspect of playing baseball, which I did. And then also the individualistic side of, you know, golf and, you know, tennis for me, growing up was, you know, built a lot of great life skills, you know, problem solving skills. Tennis is all about problem solving, beating one person on the other side of the net. And golf is sort of, you're trying to beat your, you know, your mind is trying to beat yourself up and then you're trying to beat the golf course instead of trying to, you know, beat 130 other players or whatever it is, or however big the tournament is. So, you know, so there's a lot of mental toughness that goes on in the individual sports, and then a lot of sort of team camaraderie and team building in the team sports. And so I think it's really important growing up to play both both individual and team sports certainly at a young age.
Is as you were talking, I was going to ask you about the similarities between golf and tennis, but you kind of addressed that. Is there more satisfaction winning in a team sport or individually?
I mean, look, it's been a look. I was going to say individual sport, but then my most favorite moments in tennis were the Davis Cup experiences that I had, which is our only team competition, or, you know, premier team competition, let's say, in tennis. And so, you know, you're playing for your country, you're playing with teammates and other people that are on your team. You are out there by yourself, I guess, but, you know, Davis Cup is the one competition, certainly on the men's side, where you get a coach on the bench that you can talk to and that you can converse with and talk strategy and tell them how bad you're playing that day or how good you're playing that day. And so, a lot of my greatest memories in tennis were in those Davis Cups, you know, again, playing for your country, playing with the crest on your sleeve. And, but I would have to say, to answer your question, I would say individually, you know, I mean, tennis was so unique where there is such a unique sport where when you leave the locker room, you're all by yourself, the non-contact gladiator type sport, you know, and you don't have to beat a million people that day. You just have to beat one person. Mm-hmm. And so it's problem solving and figuring that out. And when you do, you get all the glory. And when you don't, it's on you. And I like to try and figure out ways to blame somebody else when I lost, but it really is all you. And so you do get all the credit and all the blame. And there is something special in that.
I think years ago when celebrity golf started, it was just kind of a hit and giggle kind of thing, but it's certainly developed in some incredible competition. I mean, every one of you are wanting to win that tournament, and for a number of reasons. You know, there are a couple of people that are around there for fun, but, you know, winning the tournament as you did in 2020 and finishing sixth last year, only 6 points out of the lead, it's a different mindset, I suppose, than it was so many years ago. But it's really developed into something that's not only watchable because of the celebrities, but pretty exciting from the competition as well.
You're usually getting a bunch of really competitive guys or gals, and you're putting them in a situation where obviously it's competitive. Obviously it's a fun, you know, it's supposed to be fun natured, and it is. But once you get down to it, there's quite a few folks that want to win this tournament. Some guys that haven't won this tournament, you know, you speak of someone like Annika, who, you know, I had the luxury of getting to play with her in January in the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions down there in Orlando there in January. So, you know, what an incredible experience that was, playing with certainly the greatest female golfer of all time. And, you know, she wants to win out here. You don't think that she's just coming out and just being out here and having fun. Excuse me. So, you know, I got a nice little rivalry going with Tony Romo and, you know, going back and forth there in Dallas and he beat me this year and I was up six shots on him going into the last round. He shot a beautiful 66 and I didn't. And so he beat me there and I got him last year in a playoff there. So it's, you know, and he won here last year. So we got a fun little rivalry going and there's lots of guys that want to win, but it's also fun natured as well. And it makes for a real fun competition.
You know, there are a number of our celebrity tournaments across the country, across the world, even. What is it about Edgewood and the American Century Championship that makes it so special?
I mean, look, first of all, the setting is pretty picture perfect, right? You know, right on the lake, right, literally on the lake. You know, you stay right here and it's beautiful. American Century is a phenomenal sponsor and title sponsor. Not only have they been great, but I've been become very close with, you know, the guy who puts it, you know, who writes the checks for the tournament, Jonathan Thomas, and their CEO and his wife, Cindy, just phenomenal people. And then you sort of dig into who else is involved in it, and Gary Quinn and John Miller at NBC Sports, and you know, and it's just, it's a family. It really is. Somberly last year, Jack Wagner, who's a very close friend of mine, has played this tournament every year since its inception, I believe, you know, over 30 years or so. He lost his son in a unexpectedly and still came over and, you know, we're family. Like it's one big sort of family that wants to see everyone, wants to get on the golf course together, wants to get in a room together and chit chat and have a drink and you know, tell stories and such. And you know, having Jack here last year and John Miller come up and give a beautiful speech about how this tournament isn't just folks coming out and playing a golf tournament. It's so much more than that. It's about friendships and relationships that you've built throughout the years. This will be my ninth year in a row. I will continue to come here as long as they invite me. It's the best email, which is saying that you've been invited, and I register faster than you can possibly your fingers go. So to get that in before they take it away from me. So it's just a phenomenal event. And again, there's so much more that goes into it than just playing golf. You get to meet some incredible people, some incredible sponsors, some incredible people that belong to either American Century or NBC Sports or Harrah's or Edgewood or anything, you know, anything like that. And you know, everyone just sort of loves being around this area at this time of the year. You know, I haven't seen a cloud here in a long time. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful part of the world to come and spend a few days.
Scott, I know that the American Century is one of your favorite stops during the year. What do you look forward to?
Oh, I love the event. I love watching you play, Marty. First of all, it was Michael Douglas' show. You were talking about Tiger Woods, just for our listeners.
Yeah, thank you.
Might have been thinking
right
about that. Yeah. And I'm sure that invitation, when you get it, it's kind of the equivalent of the PGA Tour and somebody getting that Masters invite. You know, when you get that letter, you're signing up fast. So I can appreciate that.
Even better. Even better, I think.
Even
better. I've never gotten the Masters one, but man, is the Tahoe one good.
That's great. Then Frank, Marty and I had a chance to meet each other years back when he was playing team tennis here in Sacramento with the Capitol. So I appreciated that aspect. Marty, I know we're tight on time and a lot of people want to get to you today. Just a couple of things I wanted to bring up with you, because I have so much respect for you, just not as an athlete, but just as a person. And I think a lot of people who know you got a chance to really get to know you through the next Netflix special, The Untold Breaking Point, and how candid and how honest you've been about dealing with anxiety and just some of the mental health issues. And with mental health having been in focus, particularly last month, with it being Mental Health Month, can you just kind of talk about that and how you've been able to overcome some of that and how golf has helped you with that?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. Obviously, COVID has been a major effect on people's mental health as well. So yeah, it's fairly prevalent now. Look, I as soon as I was able to talk to strangers about my story, which ultimately made me feel better, you know, when I was able to talk about it and be open and honest about my sort of issues with mental health, whether it was anxiety, panic, depression, I sort of started learning and figuring out and finding out that I wasn't alone, and there I wasn't the only one dealing with it. Even though in sport at the time, this was 2000, you know, sort of 2012 that I had my issues, but 2015 when I really started talking about it openly in the press, to other players and other athletes and other people, really, just to give them a success story, whether they had heard of me or not, they could, you know, do some Googling or whatever and sort of watch along and sort of see how someone that was in my situation or my had in my experiences got through it. And I wanted to share how I was able to do that. I wanted to be an educator on mental health, because before I had my issues with anxiety disorder, severe anxiety disorder, I didn't have anyone around me, any loved ones or friends or anything that at least had been open to me about it. So I didn't know anything about mental health. I didn't know what was going on. And so part of my story too, although it's great to show people, you know, that you can beat it and that you can get on the other side of it and get a really good handle on it and beat it on a daily basis, it was important for me to educate people on what it was, it was okay to be open and honest, and be vulnerable about your issues, because you weren't the only one. And it's not something that that you can see as an injury, right? Like, you know, you walk by someone and they may be struggling. You have no idea what they're dealing with internally. If they have an injury, a physical injury, you can see them limping, or you can see, you know, an arm, a sling on their arm or something like that. You know, if they have an injury, you can see that and say, oh, I see that person's injured. I'll have compassion for that person, you know, in some capacity. With mental health, you have no clue what people are dealing with internally at home, with work, with life, whatever it is. Life is hard and can also be beautiful. And just giving people that sort of reason to be okay and be open and be honest with their loved ones and friends and be vulnerable, and to show people that it was okay. And I hope that came across in the doc. It was overwhelming, the response from it, overwhelmingly positive, I should say. And so there's more in the works that I want to do. I don't want to just stop with just doing a documentary. And I still talk to people, people that you and I have heard of, people that you guys have probably heard of, in the sports world, to just regular individuals that are just struggling, and reach out, every once in a while, whether it's on social media or something like that. I've had hundreds of conversations since that documentary came out, sort of trying to walk people through how I was able to get on the other side of it. And so that was really, it was a success story and educating people on what mental health is.
Well, it was a remarkable documentary. And again, my thanks to you for sharing your story, because I know you've helped so many others with it. It's Netflix again, Untold Breaking Point, for those who haven't had a chance to see it yet. And then, Marty, I also have to say, I mean, you shot the course record up there in 2020. You broke Lee Trevino's record on the course, winning the championship in 2020. What was it like to shoot a course record, win the championship, and jump in the cold water afterwards?
That was the warmest cold water I've ever felt. There's something about that Lake Tahoe water though. I do every year. I jump in on a daily basis, maybe multiple times a day. Just it feels like it just cleansed the soul a little bit. That water. So it's great to, it's just, yeah, look, it was one of those rounds where most everything went my way. Got a couple good breaks, couple putts went in. Next thing I know, I was playing with Jack Wagner again, mentioning him twice now. He should pay us for this. He looked at me. He's like, you had 10 birdie or, 10 birdies and a bogey. And I said, 10 birdies, 10. And I didn't even know. You shot 63. I was like, nah. And I was like, 10 bogeyed the first. Oh, I did shoot 63. And that was the lowest round I think I've ever had, like even practice or anything. So I don't know about the course record though. Look, I mean, like, I guess Lee Trevino has a course record. Did he play like the exact tees? I don't know. I'll take it. Don't get me wrong. Like, I will take it and run with it. But I'd question kind of like, did he play from the same places that I played from or whatever? Humbly, I'll take it though.
We don't have to worry about those details, Marty.
American Century Championship coming to Edgewood Tahoe July 12th to 16th. Tickets online, just Google it. Marty Fish has been with us. Can't tell you how much I appreciate your time. You're an incredible athlete and obviously a remarkable human being as well. So we wish you continued success, not only at the ACC Championship, but in life as well.
I very much appreciate that. Thank you guys so much for having me. Scott, it's great to hear you again. even though see you, Scott was the MC for our world team tennis team in Sacramento, playing in, go from playing at Wimbledon to the next week playing in a parking lot at the mall. But Scott was our MC. So I remember that. I remember that voice.
It was fun times, Marty.
Thank you for having me, guys. Thank you for having me.
This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Back with more right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back in. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. Frank LaRosa and Scott Marsh here. Scott, it's always fun to find out what we're doing wrong with our golf games, or maybe probably a more positive way is learn some things that will help us every time we get out there and play.
Yep, that's good. I think I know a lot about what's wrong with my game, so I do love talking to Tom to figure out how I can correct it.
Tom Morton, PGA Director of Player Development at the Hagen Oaks Golf Complex, is with us. Tom is sort of our rules and swing tips and kind of have fun on the golf course guru for the show. Tom, welcome in. How you doing?
Doing great. It's definitely that time of year where time to jump in and really sharpen up our golf for sure.
You know, when you said it's that time of the year, I thought you were going to go to the U.S. Open, which obviously is happening this weekend. And boy, I tell you, this is a year, you know, with the issues that the PGA Tour has had with LIV Golf, and now all of a sudden we all want to get together and be friends, and all of that certainly is going to take a while to reach its own level and figure out what anybody really means by all of that. But obviously some of the players that have been on the LIV Tour are playing in the U.S. Open this year. That's at L.A. Country Club. And as we were talking before the show here, you mentioned that you had played there a long time ago. So of the three of us, one of us has had experience playing the golf course. What can they expect there, Tom?
It's a really, really good golf course. It's one that I think is very intriguing. There's such a great mix of holes that the players are going to embark on. And, you know, certainly as the USGA goes into a golf course like that, they tweak and make changes and, you know, set up the course with, you know, whether it's high grass here or there, and, you know, fairways are super narrow and all that stuff. But I think the players are going to love it. It's going to be definitely US Open hard. But there's just the mixture holes. I mean, as we talked about a little bit, you know, everywhere from a 78 yard par three to a 290 yard par three. Right. And I heard something yesterday, from a player saying that they believe they'll be a little bit more nervous hitting the 78 yard shot than the 290 yard shot. I mean, how about that?
Yeah, it's crazy. There's some golfers saying that when the pin location is up front on that small par three, they're not even going to aim for the green. They're going to aim for below the green just to have a chance to kind of putt up and get par.
Yeah, I think it was Ricky Fowler that said there's that area right of that hole location that's kind of short grass. And he's like, I might just aim over there. And they were laughing, like, are you serious? You have best players in the world looking to miss the green with a pitching, whether with a little wedge.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of strategy and talk about how we're going to play a golf course, I think in many ways is foreign to recreational golfers, because you get out on the first tee and you kind of hit it as far as you can, and then you take a next club and hit it as far as you can. And as we've talked so many times on the show, that's, you know, that kind of throws the whole strategy notion out of playing the game of golf. So kind of give us a little bit of a perspective of what you mean by strategy and how we can probably look at a golf course a whole lot better than trying to hit as far as we can with every shot.
Yeah, my guess is this week on that topic, you know, with the USGA bringing up the ball rollback and that sort of thing, you know, if we flash back a few years when Bryson DeChambeau won, you know, they called it, you know, bomb and gouge. You just hit it as far as you can down there. You gouge it out with a wedge onto the surface somehow, better than a 7-iron or 6-iron from the fairway, and you move on. Well, if I had to guess, the USGA is going to set up the course this week to make that harder to do, to really put some emphasis on thinking through what you have to do. And, you know, oftentimes it's really good to look at a golf course from the green backwards. You know, we're used to playing from the tee forward. If you look at the golf course in the green backwards, it's like, okay, if I'm on the green, where's the best place to be? Then if I look back to the fairway, where's the best place to hit that shot from? And if I'm back to that shot, where's the best place to, you know, the tee shot to hit here? So it's, if you look at it backwards, you can kind of map out the golf course a little bit better than what we normally see it from.
You've mentioned so many times as kind of, you know, a bit more of that, that sometimes it doesn't make sense to, when you're ready to hit a shot to the green, to aim at a flag, because the chance of miss increases, and the center of the green, as you've said so many times, is really a great spot to kind of hit your shot.
Yeah, you know, I think this week they're going to spend, you know, probably even more time than usual during the practice rounds, really analyzing where the best places are just to play golf from. And you might see them be hitting, regardless where the hole location is, you might see them hitting to the similar spots on the green. And, you know, as I've talked to players all the time, especially this week, you know, pars are fantastic. Celebrate pars. They're a wonderful score. You are picking up strokes in the field every time you make a par.
Scott, I know you're going to be down there at least for one day. What are you looking forward to?
I just can't wait to see the course. There's so much mystery about it, right? It hasn't been played there before. You know, there's not a lot of metrics on what the score should be or what the overall winner's final total is going to be. So all of that should be great. And Tom, having played it, I think the other thing is it's a little different from US Open. It sounds like at least the fairways are going to be a little bit more generous and wide. And it really sounds like it's going to be an approach shot course versus, as you talked about, if you don't hit a fairway, you're dead normally in a US Open.
Yeah, that's going to be a premium for sure on the approach shots and second shots. And I think, you know, even though a little wider, I think if you get off the fairway, you know, they're going to make it pretty penal if you happen to do that. That's just the USGA way, right? And I think, hopefully, I haven't looked what the weather is, but they certainly tend to kind of skate that line of making it brutally difficult but fair, to sometimes it has crossed over to unfair. And, you know, hopefully that this week everything works out great. And it's just a really tough challenge, as oftentimes the US Open is.
Yeah. Fair is a relative term, isn't it?
Yes,
but it will be hard and fast, especially the weather's supposed to be pretty sunny. So that course, which they've gotten a lot of kind of June gloom there, should dry out. The other thing I know they're talking a lot about, a lot of players, is just how the bunkers have a lot of loose sand, and then it's going to be really hard to get out of. Maybe you can explain that just to everybody, what that means exactly and how that affects the bunkers.
Yeah, I mean, sand, there's obviously so many different types of sand out there. And, you know, typically the area that you're in, you only get to, you know, see typically one type. Obviously around here in this area, oftentimes we get the little denser clay type of sand that's you know, you kind of need to really kind of swing pretty hard and dig it out a bit. You know, what they're talking about is like, and then you'll go all the way to like Augusta, you have, they actually use crushed marble in their bunkers. And so it's super light, super fluffy, and you have to then really, you know, monitor the bounce that you're using and kind of come at it a little bit more shallow oftentimes. And so, you know, this sand I would think is going to be kind of in the middle of that. And, you know, these guys are just so amazing. They'll figure it out. They, it won't be a problem for them at all. In fact, oftentimes I think we'll see multiple times where they're actually aiming for bunkers when they can't get on the green, because at least they could probably put some spin on it as opposed to the rough around the green.
You know, every time a U.S. Open comes around, I can't help but think of the great line from Sandy Tatum so many years ago when he was heading up the USGA, and the USGA was accused of trying to embarrass the best players in the world. And his great line was, "We're not trying to embarrass them. We're just trying to identify them." And I thought that was a great mix between, you know, setting up a course to make it difficult, but in effect, find out who the really, really good players are.
Well, it's all about point of view, isn't it?
Yes, it is. On television, we can have that identify as opposed to being embarrassed, I suppose. You know, Tom, you certainly are recognized as one of the best instructors around, and, you know, people clamor to get a lesson from you. So, you know, let's take a few minutes and talk about a few tips that we can pass along to our listeners. You know, I can't help but think that no matter how good a player we are or how proficient we are, that we all get into habits. And sometimes those habits kind of get us out of, you know, the best posture, the best swing, whatever it might be. I had a lesson last week, just a quick one, from one of the Hall of Famers from the NorCal PGA. And he actually just slightly moved my thumb position on the club, making it really much easier for me to turn the club over as I was coming through. And then he shortened the distance in my stance. And obviously that makes it easier to turn. But you know, I had gotten into a habit of obviously widening my stance and putting my thumb over the top so I could swing a little harder or whatever it was. But talk about why it's probably a good idea to every now and then have a PGA professional kind of look at you, even if you're playing well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously if the best players in the world still, you know, take golf lessons and have people help them and monitor it, you would sure think that the average player, and I'm going to put all of us in that category compared to those players, we probably should as well. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, as we say, what we feel isn't real. And so it's good to have someone really keep tabs on that. And as you're finding out there, Frank, even the smallest, I mean, golf's a very micro thing. The smallest of adjustments can make these huge, huge imprints on performance. And so, you know, I think it's just necessary for, you know, everyone, if they want to get better, to have someone that they trust and believe in and can help identify what's going on. And then it's, you know, it is fully up to the player to go out there and develop the feels and the practices and the, you know, the time and effort to make the changes necessary.
You know, we talk so much about chipping or pitching from close to the green. And I play with a lot of people that think that their 60-degree wedge is just the greatest wedge in their bag. And let's talk a little bit about that, because I find that most of them have trouble hitting it to what they really want to do. You've been a proponent of getting the ball rolling as quickly as you can on the green, and you know, suggesting that people use other clubs, a 9-iron, an 8-iron, whatever it is, to get the ball rolling. Let's talk about the differences in that high loft shot and trying to make it work as opposed to getting the ball rolling. What are the pros and cons of both?
Yeah, I mean, I think really starting off, it's the identification of the golfer before they, I mean, as you see players play, most are in golf carts, like they've barely gotten out of the cart and they have no idea where their ball is around the green. They've already grabbed their high lofted wedge to go carry over to where their ball is. And you know, identifying what the situation is, what the lie is like, you know, what the best course of action gives you the best percentage to get up and down, that's crucial to playing better golf. And that has nothing to do with, you know, making the swing yet. And oftentimes that particular shot is better played a little bit more on the ground early, less in the air, because typically, especially if you have green to work with, you're taking less of a golf swing, not a big swing. So there's less chance for error. You know, you're letting the ball sort of get on the surface and do what it needs to do, as opposed to if you put it in the air, the average golfer especially doesn't always know how it's going to react, whether it's going to spin, whether it's going to roll. So, I mean, I think if you can put it on the surface, that is still, I think, the best play. Kind of like when, you know, in a month or so when we watch the Open Championship across the pond, they're going to be putting from 40 yards away sometimes. And certainly the courses around here aren't set up for that most of the time, but certainly set up to hit a lot of, you know, pitching wedges, nine irons, and kind of bump and run kind of chips.
I've asked this question of a lot of, you know, nationally recognized instructors. What is there one thing that you see over and over again in amateurs that, you know, is sort of a universal mistake that if we could help with, you know, learn to do that better, that our games would improve?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, going back to playing the game and thinking through things, one of the biggest things is they tend to choose, you know, let's say if they've hit their seven iron and they hit it, you know, the most solid they can, let's say it goes 150 yards. Well, when they're 150 yards, then they're like, oh, that's my seven iron. And well, the best players in the world don't hit it perfectly solid, you know, 100% of the time. Quite often they don't. And so is the seven iron really your 140 club, 142 club instead of the 150 club? And maybe that's the right thing to pull out of the bag. So, you know, I think the average golfer is having a better understanding about how far their clubs really go on average, because a lot of good things happen when you're hole high. So really understanding, you know, learning to get the ball hole high, even if you're not on the green, it's a lot easier to play golf from.
Tom Morton, PGA Director of Player Development at the Hagen Oaks Golf Complex. Always learn something. Appreciate you spending some time with us today.
You bet, guys. Thanks for having me.
Scott, that wraps up another hour of the Golf to Go radio show. And thanks to our guests, Len Dumas, the Executive Director of the NorCal PGA. Marty Fish, I really enjoyed the interview with Marty. I was really surprised to learn, you know, not only what a great athlete he was, but, you know, what an incredible human being. And you actually had some history with him as well.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Got to see him play tennis. He was a top 10 tennis player in the world, and now he's one of the great celebrity golfers. Has a great chance to win again up there at Lake Tahoe.
And certainly our thanks to Tom Morton. As always, it's always a pleasure to have him on the show. And by the way, if you have specific questions you'd like us to ask Tom, find a way to get that through the radio station, and we'll ask him on an upcoming Golf to Go radio show. Thanks for being with us. Back next week. This is Sactown Sports 1140. For Scott Marsh, I'm Frank LaRosa. Thanks for being with us in the fairway.